At that time, I was a first lieutenant, U.S. Air Force Station at Mountford Air Force Base, Montana. I was trained and assigned duties as a missile launch officer for the Minuteman 1 intercontinental ballistic missile. We were on duty inside the Oscar Launch Control Center, a concrete capsule located about 60 feet underground. We had operational control over 10 Minuteman nuclear missiles. On the evening of March 24, 1967, while my commander was on a scheduled rest break, I received the first of two phone calls from my topside flight security controller. The first call was to report unidentified lighted objects flying above the facility. Minutes later, the FSC phoned again and reported in a very agitated statement that there was a large oval-shaped object hovering above the front gate. It was a red pulsating lighted object, approximately 30, 40 feet in diameter. We had all the men out there with their weapons drawn. As I started before my commander, our missiles began to shut down. We lost alert status on all 10 missiles while this object was above our facility.
That was retired U.S. Air Force Captain Robert Salas as he testified at the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure in 2013 at the Washington Press Club in Washington, D.C. Captain Salas testified about nuclear missiles at his launch facility being shut down by a UFO. Join us next to hear what Captain Salas plans to do about it here on the Files of the Disclosure Agency. My name is Victor Vigiani. Welcome to the program. On the line from his home in OJ, California, we have Robert Salas. We're going to be discussing the upcoming National Press Club press conference that Bob is having with a whole lot of other people involved, and he's made some serious headway with both his fundraising activities and the kinds of individuals and the quality of individuals that he's going to have present at the National Press Club. I believe the date is October 19th. So, Bob Salas, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Victor. I'm anxious to talk to you and speak about what I'm up to.
Yeah, you've got a pretty big deal on your plate because way back in 2010, it seems like just yesterday, outline the purpose of what you're trying to achieve with all this, and how was it different than the first press conference?
Well, there's a major difference, and that is the Office of Director of National Intelligence issued a report to the Congress. The report said that, yes, in fact, this phenomenon, which they call the unidentified aerial phenomenon, we used to call it UFOs, that phenomenon is real. It's something not imaginary. It's not, swamp gas or anything like that. At least they haven't said that so far. But it's real, and they've gotten to the point now where just yesterday, I believe, the Defense Intelligence Act that was signed into law, well, not signed into law, it went through the House. It's still got to be signed, go through the Senate, but it will be signed, states that there will be an actual office within DOD that will investigate the UAP, unidentified aerial phenomenon, and it states that specifically. So, and that office will run for at least 3 years. But, and they're required to submit a report on an annual basis. Now, the problem I saw from the original report written by the ODNI was, that was last June 25th, I think, was that while it said there's a possibility this could affect national security, it did not specify any of the many, many, many incidents involving UFOs and nuclear weapons and bases. That's what got my dander up, and I decided we're going to press the issue, especially since it hasn't had much, hasn't been talked about that much in the media, that this connection between UFOs and nukes. And so I decided to go ahead and start a fundraising campaign to garner enough funds to set up this press conference, about incidents that happened at nuclear weapons facilities or that sort of thing. And in addition, I'll be providing affidavits of others that could not be there for various reasons. So I think we're going to have about 9 or 10 affidavits, signed documents, again, relating these types of incidents.
What really surprises me is that there's a lot more that we can talk about. I do want to get into the number of the plethora of issues that surround what you're doing and the whole history. But what really kind of, when you said it gets your dander up, it really kind of upset me too, that the U.S. Navy, with respect to the Tic Tac videos and all of that information that's come out, you know, since 2017 and the reports from the DNI and all of that. What really perplexes me, Bob, is the Pentagon must know that these missiles were shut down or put into a no-go situation literally the moment that these things happened or the day after. And the Pentagon has made absolutely no reference to this stuff, and neither has the Air Force. But the U.S. Navy has come out and allowed their pilots to talk about UFO encounters. What is it within the Pentagon and the U.S. Air Force that has muzzled them or decidedly allowed them to stay away from any kind of comment on what you guys all went through in the bunkers with these missile shutdowns? That really confuses me.
Well, I can't answer that. Why they've kept the secrets for so long. Originally, it was the U.S. Navy was keeping the secrets. They had sent out pursuit aircraft against UFOs over the Hanford nuclear site in 1945. Even before the first atomic bomb blast. I don't know that it's a competition between an Air Force and Navy. I think the Air Force decided in 1966 to organize what I consider, and I think most people who've studied it consider, a whitewash of the whole UFO subject when they hired Edward Condon. To do the Condon investigation, and then decided, even though Condon's own investigator knew about the Malmstrom Air Force Base shutdowns of Echo and Oscar flights, the loss of 20 nuclear missiles within 8 days of each other, the UFOs, while UFOs hovered over the sites, they shut down 20 missiles, and none of that got into the Condon report, even though they knew about it. And I've got evidence that they knew about it.
Wow.
So the cover-up was on in 1969. The Air Force said, no, this doesn't affect national security, and so we're not interested in this subject. And we're no longer going to report to the public on any UFO sightings. So.
Right. And then,
that has been their position up to the present day.
Yeah, I spoke with the media relations person at the United States Air Force, and you know, they have their own, you know, media relations department, and it is just like pulling teeth. They do not want to say anything about any of this stuff at all. It's not like, well, yes, we're looking at it, or we're talking about it, or, you know, stay tuned for more information. They completely say, this is not an issue that we're interested in, and as far as any kind of exposure or disclosure information, it's just a non sequitur. We're not talking about it. So there's that realm of understanding or that realm of approach by the United States Air Force, whereby, you know, the Navy is being open about this. It's really something.
They've got a day of reckoning coming. They really do. When I finish, and the other witnesses on the 19th with that press conference, they're going to have a lot to answer for. Because we're not only going to tell our stories, like I said, we're going to provide affidavits, and I've got plenty of documents to back up what we say. And these are all professional people, well-respected witnesses, and Congress will have to ask the questions of the Air Force. How do they explain this?
Could you divulge right now who specifically will be there? Can you name names, or do you want to keep that sort of until the day?
I'm going to issue a press release, and in that press release, I will list all the witnesses that will come be there at the press conference. And also, I'll have a URL that people can click to and see the press conference live, the entire conference. So, and that's at no charge. Anybody in the world who has access to YouTube will be able to see that.
Well, that is incredible that you will allow people to literally drop in on the internet with this press conference. That's an amazing feat. That in this day and age of communication, with people not being able to be there in person. Tell me, what kind of media are you inviting, and also congressional individuals? Are they being invited, or who do you expect to show up with respect to that?
Yeah, the press release will state, and I guess this is an important point also, specified guests, credentialed media, and congressional staff only will be open to invited to come to the event. So we don't. This is not a public event. Not just anybody can show up there and have a seat. It's mm-hmm. because we've got limited seating, and really the objective is to get anyone in the media, and this press release is going to be sent to all media outlets, TV, radio, print media, you name it. And that's who I'd like to see there. Because they're the ones that can reach the most people and press the Congress for open hearings. The whole objective of this is to have open hearings. If we have open hearings, then four more witnesses will come forward. Witnesses right now that are reluctant to come forward and talk about their incidents. And also if they can be, you know, given some permission or leeway, for example, they were told never to talk about it, and if the Congress can somehow allow those people to speak openly, then that would be to the good for all of us.
Yeah, it, with respect to that issue and the number of people, I'm talking political people right now, Rubio, Mark Warner, and I'm also speaking about Ruben Gallego, who has put that amendment forward. Will those individuals be aware of what you're doing, invited?
Well, they are aware. I have written specifically to all of those individuals you just named, mm-hmm. and more in the Congress. I've actually written letters. I've sent them a briefing book that I put together, a nice, thick briefing book outlining a lot of these incidents and including documents. Unclassified documents, and requesting a meeting with them. We'll be there, myself and other witnesses will be there until the late afternoon, 21st of October. So if any of them want to have meetings with us and have us brief them on what we know, we'd be happy to do that. We're doing a writing campaign and trying to put as much pressure on them to actually have open hearings. I know a few of them have already expressed a desire to do that, but as things go, you know, they always find something else more important.
You're listening to the files of the Disclosure Agency.
If the people who are involved, is specifically referencing the Department of National Intelligence, as well as the Office of the Inspector General, if these bodies within the United States, these official bodies, have expressed an openness to do what they say they want to do with respect to this new UAP investigative body, they have to be interested in what you're doing. I don't see them ignoring this. I don't see them saying, well, yes, that's just sort of an aside here. I see this, what you're doing, as integral to not only national security, but with respect to the fact that they have recognized these UAP as real. This is something that cannot be dismissed with respect to either hearings or what you're trying to do. This is incredible, Bob.
Yeah, the cat's out of the bag. They cannot dismiss this. And that office that will be studying the UAP is now to be an official office of the Department of Defense, and it's funded. It's funded by U.S. taxpayer dollars, which means the taxpayers have a right to know where that money is going, what it's being spent on, what kind of studies they're doing, et cetera. I know they're going to try to, again, put the cloak of secrecy over this, but and that's why we're asking for open hearings. There has to be an accounting, like you say, especially with the Air Force. I think this is a new era. I think we've got a great opportunity now to start opening up that vault of secrecy.
Sure. Two issues here. Before we get to the United States Air Force, let's talk for a second about major media, you know, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, Fox News, whatever. How will you, in your press release, attempt to connect with those major mainstream media who have covered this stuff to a certain degree? And once they realize that this is about nuclear weapons, how do you plan to communicate with these major news agencies to realize that this story is just as big as the 2017 release with the New York Times, if not bigger?
Yeah, it's bigger. Actually, I don't want to preempt what I've got going on behind the scenes, but we have indeed contacted, for example, CNN through various sources. And like I said, the press release will be going directly to a lot of those agencies like CNN and MSNBC, et cetera. So and we will keep pursuing doing that and writing directly to those news agencies.
This thing is a story in and of itself, even bigger than the Tic Tac videos, because the Pentagon knows that missiles have been shut down. And once that fact is realized by mainstream media, this is a big, big story.
Yeah, well, the mainstream media will know about those missile shutdowns. I will have handouts for every media person in attendance, which will go into great detail on these incidents. And, like I said, there will be direct contact with the mainstream media, and it will be live streamed, so I don't see how they can avoid knowing about it. The Congress already knows about these incidents because I and others have personally sent many in Congress and in the Senate, like I said, my briefing book.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another briefing book also written up by James Lau. I don't know if you know him, but he also wrote a briefing book and sent it to members of Congress. So they certainly know about UFOs shutting down missiles, and they cannot say that they don't.
Going back to 2013 and the citizen hearings that Steve Bassett held in Washington at the same press club that you're going to be at, you testified, and you testified well about all of that. How prescient was that initial 2013 testimony of all the people that came forward? And that was only the initial outburst of how you came forward about that. Now, fast forwarding to right now, why didn't people listen to it the first time, or why didn't it become as big an issue as you want to make it right now?
Oh, well, Victor, this is going to be at least the five times I have spoken about this very topic at this very location, the National Press Club, starting with the Greer thing in 2001. We did get, and each time I've spoken, we got a lot of media press. They took an interest for a while, and then it waned simply because the DOD or the federal government, the Congress, paid little or no attention to what we said. And that was deliberate, of course. But just think about the embarrassment, for one, that disclosing or revealing to the public that they've been holding these secrets for 75 years now. trying to sign a non-disclosure statement, never ever to speak about it. So, of course, they knew about it. They've known about it all along. And not only my incident, but many, many others. So, and like I said, there's going to have to be an accounting of why exactly they have kept all of this from the public, especially if behind the scenes they're developing weaponry, maybe putting it in this new Space Command weaponry to fight against UFO encounters. I don't know. I can't say for sure what they're doing, but if they are developing space fighting weapons, then the public needs to know about it. Otherwise, what you've got is a corrupt government. You've got extreme secrecy in a subject of such worldwide implications, and it just leads to corruption.
How does this relate to the international reporting of these kind of shutdowns or the international implications? How does this relate to an international understanding of what this is all about? What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, well, obviously these incidents have occurred in other countries all over the world. And by incidents, I mean craft, UFO craft that have crashed. And of course, UFO incidents at nuclear weapons bases under NATO. Schusterberg, the Netherlands, is one. It's a very good case supported by over 12, not only U.S., but Dutch witnesses to the event at the particular base where this object was seen flying slowly down the flight line and shining a beam of light at the weapon storage areas. Aviano Air Base, Italy, is another one. Bentwaters case, Bentwaters Base in the UK is another one, which had nuclear weapons under NATO. So these things have happened overseas involving nuclear weapons and UFOs. Okay, but I think what you're after is, how do we keep these secrets with these other countries? Well, I think there's probably a barter system that's been established over the decades where they collect information from their incidents and in exchange with the U.S. There's also a monetary incentive to keep these secrets because they can be, for example, the back engineering into weaponry and that sort of thing. So it's a very powerful, these secrets are very powerful, and they can be used to influence intelligence agencies all over the world and influence government activities, State Department activities all over the world. So that's another reason these secrets have been held for so long. There's the greed factor, the monetary factor, then there's the bartering or exchange of information between intel agencies in various ways. This is a system that's been in place since probably the late 40s, early 50s.
You use the word bartering system. What's that all about?
Well, I just mean that if, let's say, the U.S. has learned something from the Roswell crashes that they recovered, let's say the UK wants to know more about what we learned from that. We'll give you a couple of secrets on that if you'll tell us what happened at Rendlesham.
Oh.
That sort of thing. It's just an exchange of
I see.
Of these high level secrets.
Yeah, it's sort of. I don't want to use the word conspiracy, but what you're describing is a very similar situation to a consortium that wants to frame this issue in a certain way that it may or may not be palatable to media or the general public.
Yeah, it's obvious to me that there must be some kind of international organization that works with keeping these secrets and, like I say, exchanging information between nations.
Mm-hmm.
And it must have happened for a long time. If you just go to the Smith Memo, Wilbur Smith, working for the Canadian government, was asked to work with the U.S. on some gravitronics or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he learned that, yes, indeed, the U.S. was investigating UFOs. And that information was basically an exchange. Work for us on this subject, and we'll let you know a few things between Canada and the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And that was early 1950, wasn't it?
That's right. The Wilbur Smith memo within the Canadian government is probably one of the most important quote-unquote smoking gun admissions that the Canadian government was really well connected with the American government back in the early 50s with respect to this issue. Yes, for sure. How is the Congress or whoever is investigating this with this new Office of UAP Investigation, how will they calm down the public, and how will they put it forward so that it makes sense to people without kind of enraging the media or enraging Congress, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, let's reframe that. I don't think they're going to be able to calm down the public. In fact, I think the public needs to be aroused to recognize that these secrets have been withheld from them for decades. And so the public should be outraged. And that outrage is, I think, what is concerning this cabal of secrecy. And that's what they're concerned about, that the public will be up in arms about this. And that's why we're trying to press this issue. By going publicly with this press conference and showing it to the world at large, I'd like to instigate some outrage from the public so that Congress will realize that they're supposed to be working for us, not for their own political ambitions or for the DOD to keep the secrets. They're working for us, the public, and we are going to demand open hearings, more information.
Let me kind of go out on a bit of a limb here. We're just about at the end of our discussion. You seem to be presenting this in a really rational, collegial way. I understand where you're going with it, to put this forward in a really professional manner. But also, behind all of that, and I know you well enough to realize that there's a certain level of, and can I use the word anger, behind what you're doing because of how the American and international community has been treated. What's the difference between what you're doing with doing this in a collegial, professional manner and the sense of anger that you have about how this has been hidden from the international community and the American public?
Well, as far as collegial, what I want to do right now is work with everyone, every researcher who's ever looked at this thing and hold hands and come together and demand action. I don't know if anger is the right word. I'm intense about this,
mm-hmm.
but of course I've been doing this for over 25 years now. I've spoken in 15 countries. I've written a couple of books. I've talked innumerable podcasts like yours, and I'm just committed. Committed to this to the end, because the public should be angry that, and it's not just my anger. I think it's public has been disinformed, let's say, for too long on this, and it's just high time that the governments of the world really fessed up to what they know about this, because it is real.
Yeah.
You and I know it's real. Everybody, most people who have studied this at any length know this is a real phenomenon. We are, in fact, being visited by extraterrestrial intelligences And what are we to do about it? It's really up to the people of the world to decide. It's not a couple of senators and congressmen and a couple of generals that should be making these decisions.
Rob, I couldn't have phrased that better. Robert Salas, thank you so much for spending time with us here on the Files of the Disclosure Agency. We always enjoy communicating with you and your insights. We'll just have to wait to see how all of this plays out. So once again, just outline for our listeners what URL will be published. Where can they get to this?
Okay, well my press release will be released on October the 7th. It'll go to the whole universe of media, as much as I can get out there. And in that press release will be the URL link where anyone can go and link to the press conference live. They'll see the entire press conference live at no charge. They can share it with anyone they want. So they should have no trouble finding that link. Together, we can possibly help to push Congress to have open hearings. That's the whole objective, open hearings.
Yeah, that's the goal.
That's my plan.
Yeah, your plans usually come to fruition. So thank you very much, Bob Salas, for being with us here on the Files of the Disclosure Agency. And please keep us informed of anything new that comes up, and we will report it as soon as we can. Thanks, Bob. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Victor. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. My name is Victor Vigiani. This is the Files of the Disclosure Agency. The Files of the Disclosure Agency was recorded at the Zealand Communication Studios in Toronto, Ontario. Series producer, Don Emilio Zeno. Sound engineer, Brian Thomas. Research, Victor Vigiani. Follow us on Twitter at Zealand. That's Zealand. Let's talk again soon.
Outside world.